Welcome to Ear Biscuits, I'm Rhett.
And I'm Link. This week at the Round Table of Dim Lighting, we're gonna be going down the rabbit hole. We have an envelope here, it's sealed. Inside of it is a question from a mythical beast.
I can almost read it, but I'm gonna wait.
It is gonna begin a conversation that
could go anywhere, left, right, down, up.
Oh, it's gonna go down.
Northeast.
Down in the hole. Before we open that envelope though, I would just ask if you would allow me to share a big milestone that is about to happen in my life.
Okay, well ask me then.
Would you mind if I shared a joyous occasion which is happening days from now that is a milestone in my life?
I'd rather you not. No, sure, go ahead.
Every day when I get home, I pull up in my driveway and I turn off my car and I reach up and I push the button to open my garage door.
You open your garage door, there's not even a car in there.
That's right.
What are you doing there?
I use it to enter the house. I walk through the garage and then I walk through the door that's inside of the garage to get in my house, as opposed to walking just to the left of the garage and going in the front door.
Now, you do realize you use significantly more electricity entering. I know that this is a concern of yours. As someone who really cares about energy efficiency,
well,
the garage door opening is much less energy efficient than you walking 10 more feet to go to the front door. But you can do whatever you want to, because I don't really
Don't try
really
to
care.
Mess up my milestone. Because what I do is then I close the garage door behind me, and that's where my shoes are kept, there at the door from the garage into the house.
You take your shoes off in the garage?
I take my shoes off in the garage, and I put on my slippers, and then I go in the house. I'm like Mr. Rogers, man.
Oh,
put on my sweater, and then I go in the house. I'm like, hello, wife and kids and dog. Daddy's home. And every morning when I get up to come to work, I exit that way. I exit through the house into the garage and I put on my shoes. And if I'm going to the gym, I put on my heavy coat because I'm cold nature and I wear a heavy
you
coat.
You keep your coat in the garage as
yeah,
well?
Yeah, there's a coat rack in the garage.
Now,
and then
can I just interject? You do realize you're strange. I mean, it's cool. I respect every bit of it and I'm glad that it makes you happy, but you do understand that some of the things that you-
I haven't gotten to the thing that makes me happy.
No, some of the things that you just described, I would, if I didn't know you, I'd be like, I'd be like, what else am I gonna find out about this guy?
Well,
he keeps his coats and his shoes in his garage, insists on entering through this portal and changing into a different person.
Portal, that's a good word. I treat it like my
portal. It's just unusual. Unusual is great. I'm just making, do you know that it's unusual?
Well, before I answer that, let me add this just as a side note.
Okay.
When I get to the gym, I take off my coat and I turn it inside out.
Okay.
I hang it on a hook in the gym and then I work out, get all sweaty. Then I put on my coat inside out. And then I go out to my car. I get my keys from what is now an internal pocket of my coat because of how I'm wearing it. I crank up my car and I drive home. When I get home, I open the garage door, I enter my portal, I take off the coat and turn it right side out and hang it back on the hook.
I understand.
Thereby keeping all the sweaty linkness
on the outside
now, of the coat.
Let me just say.
So then the next morning, I'm putting the unsweaty.
We understand. I respect it. I think that it's completely all
genius.
It's all justified. It's all very well thought out. But I just learned something about you, and this weird insight that after knowing you all this time, sometimes
I haven't gotten to the milestone yet. But go ahead.
Sometimes I look at you as I'm speaking, or as other people are speaking, and I can tell that you're not
just
present.
Oh, I thought you with pride.
That too, and
just a little tear in your eye.
And sometimes
that I'm not
and
listening.
I feel like I ask the question to myself, you know, we spent a lot of time together. I think I asked this question to myself 27 to 29 times a week. What is Link thinking about right now? And you're coming up with these freaking systems. Is this what's going on when we're in the middle of something and that, and then you're just gone? Are you like thinking about, I gotta turn the jacket inside out? That's it.
Maybe.
Is that what the brain is? Is that where all the brain power is going? to these systems? Because, I mean, that's a great system. I totally get it. I mean,
yeah.
I think people out there are gonna be like, I'm gonna do the inside out coat thing. I understand, it's completely logical. It's just, it's interesting that you've got such, the systems are so intact and so developed.
Well, it's ironic because it's supposed to free me up for efficiencies for other things in life, like not having to wash my coat or worry about.
Because that's a big problem for Americans.
Well, there's a best way to do everything, and I.
Coat washing.
My industrial engineering degree, I don't know if it planted this information or if I was
field.
Attracted to that discipline because of the way my brain thinks so systematically superior and, to and other people that I podcast with.
And as a child, I didn't know this about you. We didn't, you know, as kids don't think about this kind of stuff, at least we didn't.
Right. I mean, I wrote in the Book of Mythicality that like I petted my dog Tucker 5 times on the head.
But you didn't share that with me. I didn't know.
No, I didn't share that with anybody. Not even Tucker.
He knew. Dogs can count to 3. I think it's been proven.
So this portal is a special place to me because it is, I'm so glad you called it a portal.
Well, it's more like a holodeck.
It's like, because it transfers me into the world and then back into my safe nest.
It's like the bridge. Well, it's like the bridge. What is the place on Star Trek where you materialize?
The holodeck.
No, the holodeck is where you go to experience like a virtual reality. But what is it called where they beam you up?
I really like Star Wars.
Star Trek is the thinking man's Star Wars.
Star Trek is the thinking man's
Star Wars. Yep, you heard it here. Gene Roddenberry.
Oh, gosh. So it's a special place to me. The washer and dryer are also in there.
I've seen those.
I will say that. As well as all the cabinetry that was in my house when I first bought it in the kitchen, and it was ugly, so we put it in the garage.
Right, put it in the portal.
We also have all the rugs on the floor of the garage that we no longer wanted in the house for whatever decorating reasons no longer fit in the house.
Yeah, there's a lot of thought that's gone into it. I have noticed that.
So it kind of looks like a yurt in there. There's like mal-matching rugs just everywhere. But there's also a couple of things which have plagued me. I cannot stand walking through what I believe to be, I thought my domain, now it's my portal to and from the world. It's cluttered. I mean, there's a lamp, 3 lamps,
three?
A chair, different stuff. There's a recliner that some friends let us borrow when Lily was going through a back surgery that now she doesn't need. So they don't want it back and they haven't come to pick it up. So it's in the garage. Mm. There's a go-kart that I bought for the kids from a neighbor because we could drive it on our street because it's a private street legally. They never got into it.
Yep.
And there's a carrier that I bought to put on top of our car to hold luggage so that we could all go somewhere as a family.
It's big, especially when you're just right next to it on the ground.
And I'm like, I can't get out of my portal walking around all this stuff, and I'm seeing it twice a day at least.
Especially in slippers.
And it came to symbolize clutter. Comes to symbolize everywhere in my life, but specifically here in my portal, just a lack of control over my life, and I just cannot walk through that multiple times a day. And I will tell you that today, somebody came and picked up that go-kart. Because for a whole year, I've been like, I'm gonna get rid of this go-kart. I put it on Craigslist.
No.
I put it on Craigslist, $200 or best offer. Within an hour, somebody's calling to come get it. Yeah. Within an hour. I could have done this a year ago.
Yep.
What are these people, who wants a go-kart in Los Angeles?
How did you communicate with the Craigslist contact? Burner phone?
I got Jenna to talk to him.
Okay.
So I did not personally talk to him because I didn't want to bring that into the mix. And I didn't want to be there when they picked it up because I didn't want them to know this is my house.
You didn't want to say, go-kart owned by Link Neal.
I could have got more money, but
you could have gotten $350.
I didn't want to do
$350 because it was at my house. Maybe
you don't really like people coming to your house off Craigslist, but I was that desperate to get rid of it.
Meet him at Starbucks. Drive the go-kart to Starbucks.
The moment we post, someone's like, "Oh God, I've been waiting for one of those or whatever."
Oh, everybody's in the market for a go-kart. I'm in the market. You didn't even tell me you were selling it.
And then we loaded up the recliner and got it out of there and just returned it to people. So we're not gonna keep asking you to come get it, the loaner recliner. We're gonna bring it to you tomorrow. This is gonna be over. Cause
that's been
10 months.
They didn't just pawn it off on
you? And they were like, okay. They kinda did. Obviously they didn't want it cause it's been there for 10 months. Well, they didn't want the recliner back.
Well, they didn't need it anymore cause their daughter recovered as well.
Yeah, but he had it in his office.
Oh, okay.
Got rid of that, and I bought a rope hoist.
Uh-oh.
Put that up, and it holds the carrier, and it levitates it above the garage door.
That sounds dangerous.
Well, it's out off the floor. I could literally, I know this sounds crazy.
Yeah, we've been there for a while.
What I'm about to say sounds crazy. I could literally park a car in my garage.
But you don't want to do that.
Just think about that for a second.
Nobody does that in California.
Nobody does that anywhere with a garage.
Unless
you live in like frigid places and you have to.
Well, that's a lot of places.
Okay, that's fair.
Yeah, don't forget so soon what the weather is like in other places.
But nowhere where weather's not a factor does anybody use a garage other than keeping all the crap that they don't want in their house.
Cold places and rainy places. We don't have cold, we don't have rain.
It's tough though. I know it's tough for everybody, even if you got rain, to keep the clutter out of there. And I guarantee you, what I'm gonna do is I'm gonna drive my car and I'm gonna park it in there. And then.
Hold on, but that's invading the portal.
I'm gonna do it once just to say I did it. And then you know what? The next day is gonna be something there.
You might drive over a slipper.
3 years ago, I got the garage clean enough right when we moved in. And I was so proud. I went in the house and I was like, "Christy, you gotta come out here and see this." And she was like, "I'm in the middle of something." I'm like, no, you gotta come out here and see this. And I bring her out there by the arm. I open up the—
You led her by the arm.
I led her by the arm. I said, "Close your eyes." Brought her out into the garage next to where my slippers are. Said, "Open your eyes." She opened her eyes, and there was my car parked in the garage. And I was just beaming. I was like a kid who brought home straight A's for the first after failing.
Was she as excited as you were?
No.
Yeah, I wouldn't
Not
think
really.
So.
First thing she said was, "You can't put the car in the garage."
Yeah, she's right.
This is the laundry room.
Yeah, so that really burst
like,
your bubble.
I was like, just let it stay here tonight.
Yeah, let it get a taste.
That one night it stayed there, and now 3 years later, it's about to happen again. It's one of those moments in your life. It's a milestone moment when you can say, "You know what? I had complete control over my life for one fortnight."
That's an illusion.
It is an illusion.
And don't let her see it,
because
she's gonna come out there and hate it again, just like she did 3 years ago. Don't lead her out this time.
I won't.
You know it's gonna be a disappointment.
It's just for me. It's just for me.
Don't tell anybody.
Then the next day, I'll come home, I open the garage, and I'm gonna pull on in, and you know what? There's gonna be 3 lamps, a chair, and a toy that Lando doesn't play with anymore.
Yeah, that's what the garage is for.
A huge dinosaur.
The garage is the staging area for offing things.
I feel like I'm fresh. I feel like a fresh bag of chips,
well,
man.
Don't get used to it.
You know when you open that bag of chips and you look down in it and you're like, "Man, it's just a world of chips. I can find the perfect chip to eat first. I'm gonna find the one that's folded over on itself."
You look into the chips?
And I'm gonna eat that one.
I open and just begin eating. It's just a different way of looking at things. That's what makes it so great.
It's when I open that jar of peanut butter, take off that white seal underneath, and then I look and it's a pristine, it's like the ocean on the calmest, it's like a lake on the calmest morning where you could just tiptoe across it like a ballerina. That's what that peanut butter is like. And then you're like, "You know what? I'm just gonna sink my spoon and then I'm gonna lick it clean. Only once will that happen with every jar.
That's true.
Only once in 3 years will that happen with my portal. Well, you want to come over?
I'm proud of you. I think I got all I needed from you just talking about it.
Ear Biscuits is supported by Mattress Firm.
Now, there was a time in my life before I sized up, you know, when I was smaller.
Okay.
And younger. I could fall asleep anywhere. Back of a car, on an airplane, just on a top of a fence post. There was many different scenarios I could find myself in where I could actually fall. That's an exaggeration. But
couch in a college library.
Definitely was able to do that. And I was a big man at the time, and I could still fall asleep in a college library. In the book stacks, we called it.
Oh, yeah.
But then something happened. I passed a threshold where I needed a bed to sleep. Something about getting old. I don't know what it is. Getting big.
Getting self-important.
Sleeping in a bed and getting a good night's sleep, it's in the top three most important things in my life at this point.
It is.
It matters to me.
It is important to optimize your whole sleep environment. So we want to encourage you to go to mattressfirm.com/podcast. You've heard us talk about Mattress Firm, America's neighborhood mattress store. Lets your budget stretch further when you're looking for ways to improve your sleep, because you always can and you always should. Get your mattress there, but they've also got all the other stuff in addition. Adjustable bases, sheets, headboards, even bedroom decor.
Mm.
I'm into glow-in-the-dark stuff. Check out mattressfirm.com/podcast and see if you can get your glow-in-the-dark on. I don't know if there are any deals associated with that, but hey, let's find out together.
Mattressfirm.com/podcast. There you can learn how your sleeping could be monumentally improved.
Hey, Christy, guess what? I brought a bunch of glow-in-the-dark stuff for our bedroom. Oh, she's going to be so excited.
Ear Biscuits is supported by Honey. You'd never turn down free money, right? Well, if you shop online without the best coupons, you're already paying too much. Fortunately, there's a free browser extension called Honey that automatically finds the best coupons or coupons, depending on where you're from, and you can say it any way you want, on the web, so you always get the best prices on everything online.
I love this as a concept because for years, I would shop for stuff and I would get to that final moment in the checkout and I'd see that there'd be a box for a coupon code.
You're like, I don't have one.
I don't have one. And then I would spend the next 20 minutes searching for one and I would find some and I'd put them in and they'd be expired. And it would just be so frustrating. And then at the end of it, most of the time, I wouldn't have found a reputable coupon and I didn't save any money. But in two clicks, add Honey to any web browser for free, then shop like you normally do. Honey scans and tests millions of coupons in the background, so no work from you. At checkout, Honey will automatically apply the best coupon to get you the biggest discount. It's pretty beautiful.
Now, I like Nike products. I got lots of Nike shoes. Well, I get my discount with Honey. I get 25% off of sale items at Nike.
Yeah, I find myself on Top Man's website. Boop, it pops up. It says I get 10% off. I'm happy.
There's no reason to not add Honey to your browser today. It's free. It takes just seconds to install. It will save you tons of money. Add Honey to your browser for free right now at joinhoney.com/ear. That's joinhoney.com/ear. Now back to the biscuit. Okay, let's get into this question.
I just feel so good. I mean, I know that it's not healthy.
I don't think you should tie
the illusion of control.
Yeah, I don't think you should tie your well-being into it.
I'm not, but I'm not gonna resist the feeling of feeling good because of it. I'm gonna put it in its place.
Allie B, if I were to get cryogenically frozen, when would I want to be woken up? And what age would I want to be frozen?
I've already answered this. The moment I pull that car into the garage,
you wanna be frozen?
Freeze the whole thing.
Well, but you don't understand. It doesn't take that moment that you're experiencing and then freeze it forever. It just, you basically die at that point. And then there's a very faint hope of you being awakened one day. Okay, there's a few things here. I've actually been thinking about a lot of things related to this.
Okay.
You know, not to short circuit this, but cryogenics is not a thing. Never will be. That's my completely unprofessional opinion. I think by the time we figure out how to actually free somebody and wake them up, we will have figured out a way to
transfer the
offload people's brains,
the psyche,
into a computer or whatever.
But I mean, are you trying to say that you don't that it's not possible, or that it won't it won't be the most proficient thing to do when you can just put it on a hard drive? That's much easier.
Well,
once you figure that out, this will be an archaic technique, if it is possible.
I'm saying that the whole point of cryogenics is to essentially live forever, right?
I thought you meant to stall until stuff is figured out.
We're talking about immortality ultimately here, right?
Sure.
Because there's the idea that in the physical world here, there is the ultimate goal of humanity, the thing that we're all kind of working towards with our technology, is never dying, defeating death, right? And cryogenics is just another way to defeat death. But I think that some of the interesting things that are happening in this area are much more promising than cryogenics. This stem cell stuff, let's talk about that in a completely uninformed way.
Uninformed. Oh.
I will say, in one sense, these rabbit hole episodes are a lot like the Averitt Brothers song where they talk about people love to talk on things they don't know about.
Mm-hmm.
Let me just say that is what is happening here. We read enough to be a little bit dangerous in a conversation.
Well, you're,
but
I mean,
not to be authoritative. So this is,
you're talking about Mel Gibson bringing his doctor on Joe Rogan's podcast.
Yeah, but
I don't know if you know it. Who cares? I mean, it's
no. We're
a podcast talking about a podcast that we listen to. But
I just. I mean, I don't think that any of you come to listen to us speak for any sort of authoritative advice. If you do, I'm really concerned for you, but hopefully you come because this is entertaining conversation. So that's what we're going to try to have. But
well, thought provoking.
We listen to.
Don't come for answers. Come for thoughts.
We listen to Joe Rogan's podcast, and he had Mel Gibson on.
Mel Gibson brought his doctor. Who treated his elderly father, who was basically on his deathbed with.
A bunch of problems, multiple organ failure.
He treated him down in Panama because it's not legal in the U.S. to treat someone with the type of stem cells that he was treated with intravenously, and maybe perhaps otherwise, but he made a dramatic recovery.
And I cannot remember the word. It starts with an M. Something. There's a certain type of skin stem cells that... are super, basically, without getting into the specifics, because we're not going to be able to do that.
You can listen to that episode of his podcast.
Yeah, it turns out that injecting these stem cells, both intravenously but also directly into the problem areas, is having these incredible effects. Basically, what they're seeing is that young stem cells that generate, basically secrete things,
mm-hmm,
that then cause the cells in older people's bodies to behave like young cells, and to basically things to start happening differently. Like there's things that when you can look at a cell and you can see the mitochondria, you can see these other things in it, and you can know, if you know anything about cells, cell biology, that, oh, this is an old cell and this is a new cell. New cells multiply very quickly and they're healthy in all the different parts, but as we age, everything becomes less efficient, and that's why you don't heal as quickly and you don't repair yourself. And eventually, you're just basically slowly dying. You know, like once you hit adulthood, you're basically just slowly dying. Mesenchymal
stem cells. Which are not embryonic stem cells.
Right. Again, and that's one of the things. We'll say that stem cells were super controversial and probably continue to be super controversial especially in the United States, because the impression was that these were embryonic and they were like taking babies, and that's not at all what this is. That's not what's happening. I don't exactly know the science behind it, but it isn't that kind of thing. Some of them are from the umbilical cord that are just donated, but they can also get some cells from your own body. And anyway, it's not actually a controversial thing. It just kind of feels that way. But anyway, what is happening with this, with the way that it's like, ultimately, it's like Mel Gibson's dad was 92, had all these issues. He's 100 now. And he's as healthy as he's ever been. And they're reversing heart disease. They're healing people who have spinal cord injuries. And this is not pseudoscience. This is not like anecdotal evidence that you see in some whack commercial. No, this is documented, peer-reviewed stuff that is happening where people...
Even though we are only repeating the anecdotal evidence, but...
No.
But yeah.
No, but the doctor was not... Right. That wasn't anecdotal.
Okay, that's true.
That's well documented, multiple sources. It's been done multiple times. Like people who, like the story of a guy who was in this car wreck and could not walk, had no sensation under, you know, below the vertebrae that where the spinal cord injury was. Now the dude, and the dude walks around, he's fine. He walks around, he has full mobility, full functionality of his everything below the belt, mm-hmm. and he can walk, he can run, he can do anything. And it's because of these freaking stem cells that are repairing tissue in a way that it was not possible before this.
It definitely, that conversation definitely had this futuristic, magical ring to it that's like, wow, this is what it's gonna be like. This is gonna be such a commonplace treatment a decade from now. It felt like the way that people were talking about cryogenics, you know, years ago. Talking about Joe DiMaggio freezing himself or something like that.
Walt Disney,
which that's a myth. He did not freeze himself. I believe that they said that Michael Jackson had a chamber before he died.
But let's just say it
feels the same as cryogenics, but it's much more rooted in promising science.
And without getting into I don't want to bore you guys. I know some of you guys, when we talk about certain scientific concepts, are like, well, I don't want to hear about this. I don't want to talk about that the whole time. And obviously, we don't know that much about it. We just listen to the podcast, and I've read a couple of books. But let's just assume that things will continue as they have been, and this technology, you know, coupled with CRISPR and these other things that are going to continue to happen and develop. And
yeah, you can just get in. So your lifestyle will be, you just get an injection, or you'll hook up, like you'll charge your car, you'll go through your portal into your living room and sit in your recliner, and then you'll hook up to your IVs of the stem cells, and you'll just get euthanized.
Yep.
Not euthanized. Totally different thing.
Yeah. You'll be, for all intents and purposes, again, I don't know when this will happen, but let's just assume that there will be a point in which we can continue human life indefinitely. Okay? Now, interesting book. I told you guys I've raved about the book Sapiens. Well, the same guy wrote Homo Deus, which is a follow-up to Sapiens, which is basically looking forward into the future.
Mm-hmm.
I just started this book. I'm a few chapters in. But he talks about this issue, the idea of we're all kind of trying to become immortal. That's what all this technology is kind of looking towards. And he talked about the idea of how we mortals take risks, right? It's like we go surfing, which is not even that risky. But we might go skydiving or even ride in a car. We do things all the time that for certain moments, the probability of us dying is greatly increased.
Yeah, like shoot a confetti popper at your face.
Exactly.
Point blank range.
And we do these things knowing that, well, I'm going to die someday. I mean, you don't think about it like that, but we live in a culture where we know that we've got 70, 80, 90 years and it's over. Well, his point was, if we get to a place where you can sustain human life indefinitely, people are going to become very, very different they're going to look at risk a lot differently. Because it's like, man, I could get 500 years on this planet. I shouldn't go skydiving because I could be losing
so much.
300 years as opposed to, well, I'm going to die in 40 years anyway.
But then you've got like what Hollywood has taught us about the vampire demeanor.
It's sad and lonely.
It's nihilist and defeated. I mean, it's like they're just grumpy. When you live that long and you encounter, well, first of all, they're encountering a lot of people who aren't living that long, so they are lonely.
Well, and also, sense,
but they're grumpy.
They can only be seen. They can only come out at night. They have to kill people to live. There's a lot of negatives to being a vampire. That's why I'm never going to be one.
That's their problem.
Of course, I really don't have any control over that. I could get bit. But let's just say that it is going to happen. I mean, it is interesting to think, are we going to qualify? I mean, I was actually on the treadmill at the gym the other day, and I'd been listening to this book, and I was like working out, and I was like, you know, I have to put the information into the treadmill so I can get my heart rate and all this.
Yeah.
Now, the first week I went to the gym, it was like weight. I was like 205, age 40.
Ooh. Ouch.
And hurt.
Two strikes.
To type that in there. Without even thinking about it, I've been reading this book.
Third strike would be likes easy listening music.
That's not an option on the treadmill.
Okay, good. Enjoys soft rock.
No, it's really just your age and your weight.
Okay.
You know what I put in? I didn't even make this connection until right now. You know what age I put in this week? On the treadmill?
You put in a different age, first of all?
Put in 25.
What?
Now, the reason I did it is because if you put in 25, the target heart rate goes up significantly. So you have to work harder. And I was like, if I'm here, I need to work harder. But I was also thinking, I also need to work harder like I'm a 25-year-old because,
well,
if I'm going to live...
25-year-old treadmill might kill a 40-year-old man.
No, I held on. I was sweating a whole lot more. I did realize that a 40-year-old trying to be a 25-year-old on a treadmill is much uglier to watch than a 40-year-old just being a 40-year-old. The first week is just a 40-year-old on a 40-year-old treadmill, and I'm sweating a little bit, and then I'm getting off. A 40-year-old on a 25-year-old system... I was like sweating and making noise. I had my headphones on, listening to music.
You could feel that you were making
17 minutes into it, I realized, you're breathing like really loud. Like, but then I looked around and everyone else was on headphones and they're all breathing and farting and stuff. Nobody's listening to each other.
Breathing and farting, that's the cycle of life.
But I just realized now that what I've been thinking about is, well, maybe this is gonna happen. Maybe. There will come this time when we solve the deepest mysteries of human longevity. Are we gonna be young enough where we can somehow be across the threshold and be taken on into the future? And then I started thinking, do I even want that? Do I want to be a vampire? Do I want to live to be 500? Or is 80, 90 years, is that the right time to live and then just be done?
Then you slowed that treadmill down to 40 again?
No, I'm staying on 25 because I want to be healthy and trying to get my heart in shape.
Did you bring a coat to the gym?
No, I don't do that. I don't take a coat to the gym.
Okay, whatever, okay.
But if I do, I'll wear it inside out.
Well, that was good. That was my only follow-up question. I'm thinking.
Do you want to live forever? And if you do live forever, what happens, man? I mean, we did our 200 year plan as an exercise in entertainment, back on GMM. But you talk about switching careers.
Well, I think this is. I mean, I do think exploring Allie's original question. Philosophically, we'll kind of get at the same thing because that is the implication. There was at what point would you want to be frozen so that when you woke up, you could live from that point forward and maybe retain? Like we're 40. Well, I'm not 40. I am 39.
Oh, round up, sucker.
You know, our question was, what, how much longer do we want our bodies to deteriorate before we have the chance of drastically slowing that down at some point in the future, if that could happen? You know, it's, do you want to live forever at just degrading a lot slower? I guess so. I mean, it's the same experience, except like for every one day we get now, you get three. I think that that seems like an easy yes for me. I don't.
But if there was a time in which you were going to be frozen, let's just say that this would work. I think the question is, what age will you have lived enough of the life on this side? Is it you get to be 70 and it's just like, okay, well, if you get to be 80, like, when does life become more of a burden to live? You know, and this is different for different people. But for some people, things get really, really difficult past a certain age. And
right.
And you want to be, would you want to be frozen before that point?
I think at the point, here's the thing, you know, I've got Christy, who I would, you know, she would have to be frozen with me. I think you, and then I'd want you to be frozen with me, and then you'd want Jesse to be frozen with you. And then maybe, you know, what? We don't want our kids to be frozen, so we're going to wait for our kids to get to develop lives of their own, and then we reach a certain level of pride in knowing that they're achieving happiness in life, and that they've, you know, they got their own lives now. So obviously we're not going to freeze ourselves and just let our kids go through grade school, high school, college without us. Peace out, kids.
Yeah, but if you wait until you're old, the kids have already lived their lives. You're probably a grandfather. They're adults.
No, but there's no point. I mean, when you start to think about that, it's like, okay, then my kids are on their own.
Now you got grandkids.
No, well, no, the kids are on their own. You know, when do they start making a family of their own? You want to spectate that from the stand. You want to be involved in that. There's never a good time for me, with what's happening in my life right now, to pause it and say, you know what? I'll check back in 100 years from now when you can figure out how to drastically improve my quality of life from age 40 on.
Well, but
and then, so by the time, you know, the people who want to be frozen, I think they're either on their way out and it's too late, or, you know, it's just, their life's not going well, so they want to, you know, hopefully wake up in an era when it can be better.
Well, and part of this question is, you know, I think the thing that we all fear is irrelevance, right? And I'm not talking about like the irrelevance that we fear as entertainers, you know, nobody caring about what we have to say anymore, but just as a person. So there's just the way our society works. You get to be a certain age, and people just don't care what you think anymore. They care about you, right? So you got like your grandparents. You have three living grandparents, right?
Mm-hmm.
Lincoln is how old now? 80 something?
88.
Yeah. Now, you love him unconditionally, love him deeply. But he's an 88-year-old man. He has done the things that he's going to do.
Right.
He's contributed 99% of the things that he's going to contribute, right? And he's comfortable with that. He's fine with that.
Sure.
But at this point, like, you don't think of his opinion or his perspective. It doesn't carry the same weight that it carried when he was 58 and you were 8 or whatever, right?
Right.
So there's this point in which our society has just sort of said, you get to be this age and it's just sort of like, you're old now. You matter, but you don't matter at the same time. Like, that's just this collective thing that people kind of do to old people. And I think that personally, out of almost exclusively out of a sense of pride, the idea of just not mattering, of just being a person who is in the room at a family gathering and is like, everybody, sure, we all love Grandpa Rhett. We all love him. But, you know, we're now talking about things that really matter. And at that point, he kind of checks out. I have a huge fear of that. Now, when I am 88, I'm not gonna care about that probably. I care about that now as a 40-year-old because I'm like putting myself into the body of it, my 88-year-old self.
Yeah, you're having a midlife crisis.
Well, it's not a midlife crisis. It's a fear of being old. It's a fear of being irrelevant. A midlife crisis is thinking that my life is over now. I love my life right now. But I think that's the part of getting old, not even death, just getting old that we fear. And so when I answer this question, I'm like, well, right when I feel like that's about to happen, when I'm about to become in what I see as irrelevant, that's when I want to check out.
Hmm.
And I feel bad even talking about it because I'm not trying to talk crap about old people. I'm just saying that this is just the way, you know, if you're of a certain age, you can't even get hired, even if you're capable. Like, you know, if you're a white-haired 70-year-old, you're just as qualified as a brown-haired 30-year-old you'd be like, this guy, he's 70. Why does he want to work here?
Mm-hmm.
You know, just we don't feel like old people have anything to offer. I'm not saying it's true. I'm just saying that's just the way that.
Well, when it is true, it's a sad reality.
Right.
So, what do you summarize your point?
I'm just saying, to answer Allie's question of when would I want to be cryogenically frozen if this was a legitimate thing? Because you were talking about, I want to spectate all these things. There'll never be a point in which I don't want to be a part of my family's life or whatever. I'm saying at the point that I become a burden is the point that I would want to check out.
And then it'll be too late, unless assuming that when they thaw you out in this thought exercise, that they can do something reversing, which that, I think you can slow a lot, but the whole reversing thing, even the stem cell stuff we're talking about, I don't know that it seems still like a leap to say that it would make you young. It would just make you, the best of the age.
We're assuming that you're going to basically be the same thing when you wake up, and then you're like, well, I was almost irrelevant when I was frozen, and now you wake me up, and I'm just irrelevant again.
You know what? It's analogous. You know, I don't want to go in another sci-fi direction, but I am. It's in a lot of ways analogous to who's going to go colonize Mars. You know, and you're not going to take your kids. Maybe you take your wife, depending on the criteria and how many people are going. But I'm talking at first. At first, they're not taking a bunch of children to colonize Mars. I would assume not. But it's people checking out of their Earth lives forever. They're never coming back. They're going to go to Mars, and so they continue to live a life, but that you have to live a certain type of life or have a certain level of autonomy to be comfortable with, I'm going to check out of this world and enter a new world. So I think there are people who are willing to do that. There are people that, like, you know, I'm not one of those people. You know, when you've got kids that you're investing in, that's a big factor.
Yeah, I think we're probably talking about single. But I mean, the people who volunteer to do this, and again, I'm kind of with Neil deGrasse Tyson on this. I don't understand why we're thinking about colonizing Mars when we've got a planet that we really need to be worrying about here that's actually habitable now, but may not be for much longer if we don't correct things.
Well, I think we should have all the irons in the fire, and we should have all types of people working on all types
of things.
But
let's just say, yeah. But this we're gonna talk about
enough brain power to go around.
Healthy 25-year-olds who are, you know, single or going with their partner, don't have children. They're saying bye to their parents. Maybe they don't have a good relationship with their parents. I mean, you're going to have plenty of candidates. I don't think you have to worry about that.
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, it's interesting because we're talking about the ties that we have with our family. And this is totally natural, and I'm in complete agreement with you, that as you think about your life and you think about what commitments you can make and you can't make and how long you want to live, when you want to check out, when you want to be frozen, you're thinking about it in the context as a husband and a father.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be very interesting. I think that a lot of our commitments in the way that we see family is based on our life expectancy. Meaning that if we get to a place where we can live forever, are you going to be with the same person forever? Like if you can ostensibly live to be 1,000 years old, and your kid that you had, or your kids are going to be 970 years old. You know what I'm saying? And they're going to have kids, and they're going to have kids. Like the way
there's a space issue.
There's definitely a space issue.
That's like a capacity issue, but let's put that aside.
Let's just theoretically say that they continue, and maybe it's not every 30 years. Maybe a generation becomes, 100 years or something like that. But you're still talking about 10 generations of people. Are you going to really care? Like, and think about the way that a family tree goes. You have two kids. They each have two kids. You go 10 generations. We're talking about hundreds of people who are related to you, but because you're so freaking old, at a certain point, you're going to have no connection to them, even though they are your direct descendants, and they're contemporaries with you.
You have an embarrassment of riches of all these people that are related to you, but it's like walking down the street, and you're like, odds are, I wouldn't be surprised, given the odds, that this person
and
is,
I wouldn't
is a,
care.
Yeah, you couldn't help but not care. I think is your point. That's an interesting point.
And listen,
you can't maintain meaningful relationships with that many people. It doesn't matter what the blood connection is.
Right. And I'm not trying to get myself. I'm not trying to get myself in trouble. I'm not trying to get you in trouble. I'm just talking theoretically here.
With our wives, you mean?
Yes. So let's just say, let's not even talk about us. Let's just talk about people who are in relationships in general.
Bobby.
Do you think
and
that if people can live forever,
Jenny,
and they get married in the first 30 years of their lives, that the expectation culturally, now the cultural expectation, traditionally speaking, is that you get married and you stay married and then you die, right? Till death do us part. Now, not everybody does that. There's a lot of people get divorced for lots of different reasons. But the cultural sort of norm is that the expectation was that we would be together forever, even though half of couples don't.
Are we about to undo everything we talked about in last week's podcast?
No. Don't think about it in respect to your wife. Think about it as
Bobby and Jenny,
a cultural institution. There is absolutely no way that the expectation would remain that you would stay with the same person until you were 1,000. I believe that the expectation to stay till death do us part is based on life expectancy, coming back to my original argument. And if life expectancy isn't a thing, I just expect my life to go on forever, there's going to become some norm. And I think the norm will be based on being with somebody and producing another generation. And when that generation is
the same as you.
No. The moment in which you can no longer connect with the offspring. So you can connect with your grandkids, because that already happens. You can connect with your great-grandkids, because that already happens. There are some people who connect with their great-great-grandkids, but I feel like great-great-great-grandkids, now you're in a place where the emotional capacity for connection with great-great-great-grandkids is so low, that's when you say, all right, it's been great. This has been an incredible relationship, and now we're going to leave, and we're going to start, and we're going to do this
again.
Well,
the thing I do agree with is that it becomes like a corporate relationship. Like you're the CEO of a company. When a company gets so big, this does happen. The CEO of the company can't have a meaningful work relationship with certain people down the business structure. And I just think, you have. I don't know. I mean, you and I can be very heartless. So I'm trying to channel that person who's listening. No. Oh, okay.
It's not heartless.
No, man. And here's what some people are saying right now. I'm going to try to channel it. And that is, there are people out there who have the capacity to love nations of people in a way that, like, We're just not
love nations. I love nations of people.
I love
all nations.
I love all nations. I love everybody. I'm just saying, as a unit of measurement, there are people who their love is unbounded. I just think that.
Well, but we're also
but we're talking very practically, like practical mechanics of actual connection. There is a limitation to the human, to a human's ability to have a meaningful. You can have a love for a nation of people, but you can't have a connection. You can't have a specific relationships with that many individuals.
Yeah, well, I think it's 150, right? There's a certain, I don't know what the number is. It's the so-and-so number because somebody, some anthropologists like determined that just based on hunter-gatherer heritage that the human brain has like the capacity to have meaningful relationships with like 150 individuals. It's just based on like tribe size, whatever. But so I don't want to say, because we're also talking about it, the way I broke it down was when it you could no longer connect with the offspring. But you might be saying, but what about the partner that you're with? Isn't the love for your partner just going to continue indefinitely? I'm just saying that the expectation for how long the relationship would be is that would actually take on a much more practical approach. Because here's the thing. We like to think that this is just the way it's always been. But the fact is that, well, many different cultures and probably most the way that relationships were formed in the distant past was much different. In fact, humans were much more like animals in the distant past, in that they were in polygamous relationships. I mean, that was what when you go back to those 150 sized tribes. It was a dude with multiple wives. You see that in all kinds of ancient texts, and there's lots of archaeological evidence of that. So that was the cultural norm at the time. So what I'm saying is that if things, and the reason that it was that way is has all kinds of factors that contributed to what was the most efficient way to live at the time for multiple women to pair up with one man. It was the way the dynamics work. So I'm saying that in the distant future, if people are living forever, the dynamics, the expectations, and the cultural norms and what we consider to be moral will change because it changes over time as circumstances change. And I don't think it's going to be this thing where it's just like, oh, well, that love isn't real. It's going to be like, no, that love was there for a certain time. And then both people are just like, okay, either we continue this or we don't. And it'll be based on so many different factors that we can't even begin. Like that gets back to the, when are you going to wake up? When are you going to be introduced? Which we talked about a couple of podcasts ago. You might wake up at a time where so many things have changed and we've tapped into the way our brain works and we have no capacity to even understand the future that we've been put in.
Your mind explodes.
And then you're like, I shouldn't have woken up. Not again, I agree with you. Not trying to be bleak about it. It's just, it's a reality.
But the thing about staying paired up for life, even if that's eternity, and the argument of, 50 years together, 60 years together, the type of thing of that seeming long, but and to be celebrated as a cultural achievement. I'm just wondering if you take it backwards to, like when life, based on life expectancy, that's what makes it awesome to say, okay, if we're gonna live this long and you're gonna be partnered up for that long, mm-hmm. that's to be celebrated. Well, let's go back to life expectancy when life expectancy was much less, and then that being with somebody that long was, I'm sure, still celebrated. Or maybe, are you saying? Would you say it was no big deal when people were dying of the Black Plague or whatever it was called?
Go ahead.
Because then I'm saying, if you stay together as long as you live, if life expectancy is 250 years, it seems like the same principles would apply. It doesn't seem like that should change. The arguments that we were making, on the previous podcast about how, you know, relationships, commitment in a loving partnership opens up a world of experience and enrichment that just moving to somebody else and starting over, which, you know, might be more amorous, it's, you're missing out on something. I'm trying to make the argument that if you add, if I added another 150 years in my relationship with my wonderful wife, it would be that much more wonderful for ways that I could not anticipate, because
that's not what I'm saying. That, because you're talking about life expectancy. I'm talking about suspended animation, not suspended animation, basically not aging anymore. So I'm talking about indefinite life.
You're talking so, about, yeah, I know, but I'm incrementally getting there. So then I'm just making an argument, well, let's pull back to life expectancy 250 years. How do you feel about that? Well, that I feel like I can make that argument. Now well, 500 years.
Well, okay, but you're also it's being a little unfair because you're putting it in personal terms. Obviously, if I put it in personal terms, I'm going to say that if I were to live to be 1,000, I would stay with Jesse all 1,000 years.
Yeah, and you know what? And we'll cut it right there. And what I said and what you just said is what we'll send to them. And now we can just talk. We can just
I'm not talking about it personally, because my perspective that I bring to this and your perspective that you bring to this is a person who's going to live to be no more than 100 if you're lucky, and then you're going to die. You and I live in this time frame. We have this mindset, we have this perspective, and so do our wives. And we live in a time that has this cultural expectation.
But let's talk about 250 years.
You cannot talk about
it personally. Let's talk about 250 years.
And I'll go right back to what I said. So 250 years, when do the great great grandkids come in? Definitely before 250 years. And so I'm saying that I think that that's the trigger point, at which point that the offspring that you create would begin to lose an emotional connection with them, the offspring that you created with this individual person. Because ultimately, if you want to get down to the mechanics, that's kind of the purpose of that. That's sort of the ultimate biological purpose of pairing up in a traditional sense, is to propagate the species, right? That's what those desires, that's what they're kind of based in. And so if you put it into those terms,
you're making an argument void of consciousness. I mean,
I'm sure a bonobo would
feel that way.
No, because you're trying to argue from the perspective of someone who feels about things the way that we do. Again, that's why if you ask me personally, I'll say I don't care how old I'm going to get, I'm going to stay with my wife, because that's the mind frame. But if we were
born into a world where people paired up and it was celebrated to be in a committed, propagating relationship,
it wouldn't be celebrated
for a certain amount of time, and then it was expected
to break up
once you hit the what do we call it?
Let's call it 250.
No, but let's
the
name,
threshold.
Let's name this threshold something that sounds cool, that the culture could really get behind.
The love milestone.
The love milestone.
The love stone. There's a whole ceremony. There's a stone and you rub it and all your friends come.
I think
your offspring down to your great, great, great grandkids come. Your great, 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 great grandkids don't come because you don't care about those stupid idiots. There's too many of them.
Right. So
you got hundreds of people already showing up at this freaking thing.
If we were born into that cultural norm, where that was celebrated, and then at the love stone, then you part ways amicably or not.
No, you know what would happen at the love stone? First of all, it would be a cultural contract. It would be a societal pact. And what would happen at the love stone agreement is not only would you, and it wouldn't be seen as a breakup. Again, we see all these things in a negative light because of the time that we live in. If you could live to be whatever age and you got to the love stone, what would happen at the love stone ceremony is that the next two people that you were both going to pair off with would be at the love stone ceremony. That's what a love stone ceremony would be. It would be this couple is parting and starting two new couples. And you'd still be friends, but now you start the whole process over again with someone else. And it would be celebrated culturally.
Here's what I'm saying.
It's counter to everything that we think.
But if that were the cultural norm that I was born into and experienced my whole life, I could see that I would fall in line. You know, because it's just the way it is. You know, if you're taught your whole life that this is the beauty of it, and these are the ways to celebrate it, you know, I'm certain I could be convinced of it.
But then there would be a movie. There would be a movie, and it would be a movie about, it would be called Turning Over the Love Stone. And it would be about this couple that got to the Love Stone ceremony, and the new partners were there, and they shunned the new partners, and they started the whole thing over again together. And that would become celebrated as the ideal, because that was turning the cultural norm on its head. And it would be seen as incredibly controversial. They moved past the Love Stone. They're actually talking to their great, 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 great grandkids. That could also happen.
Yeah, I think there are many people that would want to stay together.
And you and I are two of those people.
Absolutely. It seems like by saying that we're actually saying the opposite.
No, I told
and
you.
And I'm not.
If from a personal perspective.
You tricked me, by the way. You spent the last 15 minutes to get me on your side about this freaking Love Stone.
Yeah.
And then the moment I'm like, you know what, if I was born into this cultural norm and blah, 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 I could see that I would fall in line. And the moment I said I would fall in line, you're like, and then they'd make a movie, and the awesome thing that I would agree with was someone turning over the Love Stone.
Yeah. That's
you trapped me, you jerk.
It's the beauty of talking about things that will never come to pass in our lifetime.
This
is totally fictitious,
you know what can never
man?
Come to pass? The release of this podcast. We can't release this.
Yes, we can. Now, again,
this has cultural implications in my household. Now, because you tricked me.
Okay, so what you're telling me is that just because if your wife finds out that you said that if it was culturally acceptable for you to only be married to her for like 300 years. That you might call it quits after 300 years. You think she's gonna be upset about that?
Well, I wouldn't call it quits. I'd call it the Love Stone.
Yeah, the Love Stone. It's all positive. You gotta say, listen, baby, we're talking about a fictitious reality that we started talking about based on Ali B's question that led us to a place where we talked about a time when humans can live indefinitely, where once you get to having great, great, great grandkids, you have no more capacity to love. And so there's this thing, there's a ceremony called the Love Stone where you get a new partner. And
you know what she would say?
What would she say?
I told you years ago to get out from under that tall guy's thoughts.
No, what? You act like this is my fault. This isn't my fault. I'm just speaking what I believe. What I'm talking about is not what I want, but what I guess would be the truth if this were to come to pass. That's all I'm saying. My personal application is together forever. My best guess as to what would be the cultural norm is that it would change, because together forever is based on forever not being that long. But when forever becomes forever,
everything, forever, ever?
Everything we think about commitment will change. And I think that's going to be one of the most significant cultural questions that has to be answered if and when we reach true immortality, which I don't necessarily think is ever going to happen. And I definitely don't think we're going to live to see it. And I don't even think that I would want to be completely honest with you, because I think at some point I'm just going to be ready to check out. Even if I do have this amazing 40-year-old body that runs on a 25-year-old treadmill.
Listen, you can't stroll the grocery aisles forever. At some point, you're right, you got to check out. I mean, think about it. Yeah. That's a good analogy.
Yeah.
I mean, I've been in a grocery store, and the last thing I wanted was to stay there forever.
Yeah, but you can go to like a super Walmart. They got more stuff.
It's kind of trashy feeling, though.
I mean, you can go to, there's so many stores, though.
What do you mean? In my analogy, there's only one store.
The store is not your wife, right?
Because she has everything I need.
Because that wasn't what I was saying. I moved beyond that. I'm gonna be in the Super Walmart for the rest of my life.
Man, usually at this point I'm like, all right, you let us know what you think, hashtag ear biscuits, but you're not gonna listen to this. Because this has been this has been censored.
Well, here's the thing is that you're making the assumption that our wives listen to this podcast. They don't.
No, they don't.
They don't. They listen to us. They listen
and
to us.
And that's why you are listening to
blabber
this.
On about things at home.
Oh, gosh.
Why are they gonna choose to just play a digital file of us talking for an hour?
And let's be real. All right?
Yeah.
Who are we to think that they would be offended that we would say that? They'd probably be like, "Hallelujah."
Yeah.
You think I want to be with you forever?
I think that
I know one of our wives is gonna be thinking that.
I know. I think she'd be on the same page with me. I think she would say, if that comes to pass, the love stone ceremony hundreds of years into the future, I get it. It's fine. Wish you the best.
And you know what? Well, you know, we can restone.
Yeah, you can come back again.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You have forever.
You have forever. Unless you die in a car wreck.
Oh, that's a good point.
Yeah, which is one of the things that I was talking about earlier, but you know, let's just assume that you're living in like a weird bubble suit that you can't die, which that makes things awkward right there. Bubble suit.
I just picture myself walking down the grocery store aisle in a bubble suit. And how do I get out of this place?
You can't die. You're in a bubble suit.
Can't fit through the checkout.
Yeah.
All those magazines.
Okay, well, Abby, or that's not your name, Allie B. Hopefully,
you've really dredged it up.
Yeah, I mean, this is all your fault. But you know, hopefully, many, many years from now, somebody at a love stone ceremony will dig this up and be like, you know, the origin of this whole idea. It's a couple of Nimrods back in 2018 talking out of their buttholes. hashtag ear biscuits.
Breathe in deep.